for 8 months. Whenever I should have had a gun in my right hand, I thought of you. Now I find you in exactly the position that suits me. I had lots of time to learn how to shoot with my left.
When you have to shoot, shoot. Don't talk.
Every gun makes its own tune.
We welcome you to Jordan-Hare Stadium for tonight's game.
It's the Wishbone Podcast, your source for discussion and commentary about the national championship-bound Auburn Tigers. Here are your hosts, John Ringer and my dad.
Hello and welcome to the Wishbone Podcast, brought to you in association with the WarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
John, we are 2 days, as we are recording this, away from the new year. And we are roughly a week away from the big clash in the Rose Bowl Stadium in Pasadena. And it's a good time to be an Auburn fan. I'm just seeing stories about us in the New York Times. I'm enjoying listening to Paul Feinbaum for once. It's a good time to be an Auburn fan.
It's always a good time to be an Auburn fan.
You're right. I stand corrected.
As Auburn Elvis corrected me, it's always a good day to be an Auburn fan. But this time, right now, is especially sweet.
It is. Let's see. Before we get into our general discussion and our questions and everything, this is sort of our special year-end episode where we will be looking at Florida State, previewing that game. Looking at other bowls that have been and will be in the SEC and so forth, and generally talking about the team and a good bit about our opponent. We've actually done a little bit of research. How about that? It's crazy. But first I've got to say this episode, at least from my end, is brought to you by Lipton Tea. I didn't have the energy to go out and buy me a new gallon of Red Diamond this week. My apologies to our non-sponsors, but I will not be eating animal crackers or any other sort of snack food during this broadcast. I will be sipping on my Lipton tea that I made myself. I'm very proud of that. I did just enjoy, as fuel to get through this next hour, I did just enjoy leftover turkey fried up in bacon grease on the stove, with, on top of it, the bacon from said bacon grease, and a big slice of Adams Reserve New York extra sharp cheddar cheese on 2 pieces of toast. John, let me tell you, that is good, good holiday eating right there. Can't do that every day. You can't do that every day if you want to see the 2014 Auburn Tigers.
That's correct.
But it's good for today.
Your cardiologist is not sponsoring this podcast.
Well, in a financial way, maybe, yeah.
That's right.
So, So what's on your mind to start things out?
Well, before we get into the Florida State discussion, I just want to tell everybody Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. And we've received a lot of tweets and emails from people, you know, that appreciate the podcast and enjoy it, and people that ordered our books for Christmas and got them, and we hope that you all had a great holiday season, and we appreciate your support, and we look forward to doing this next year, too.
Absolutely. This was a great holiday season for people ordering our books, and I really appreciate it. I know John really appreciates the interest, and I hope that everybody that got them we got a bunch of tweets from people who got them for Christmas. They sent us pictures of them under the tree, or the two of our books, maybe, Josh's Turberville book, or Mike Scott Nicky's National Champions book. So there were several good books floating around this year that made good Auburn Auburn Christmas present. So that's really cool. I feel very privileged to be in that situation.
That's right. All right, Van, here we are. We're a week away. You know, we've had a little time to come down off the high of the, you know, the Alabama game and the Missouri game, which we said we needed. After having some time to digest it and absorb it and, you know, get away from it a little bit, how do you feel just in general about this team and the game?
Well, you know, that question encapsulates and encompasses a lot of what I plan to talk about in the next hour from my perspective, which is that as the enthusiasm and the passion and all that doesn't fade, but, you know, you step back from it a little bit when you're focused on your family and on the holidays and everything. And when you come back to it, maybe you're a little more cold-eyed and rational than you maybe were, you know, within the heated moments after the Missouri boat race and the and the Alabama kick six and so forth. But and so when you look at it in kind of a cold, logical fashion on paper, you know, this really does seem like it should be like a 38-20 Florida State win. But that, and I think that some of the commentators on ESPN and other places that I've heard the last couple of weeks have looked at it. They've only gone that far and stopped. And I think that there are a lot of other factors that have to be taken into consideration before you can start making grandiose predictions about Florida State running away with this game. I think that there are very, very definite considerations that they're overlooking, and we're going to go through those as we go through the next through the rest of our show. So I guess to answer your question, I've faltered a little bit. I've had my little nagging doubts, and then I looked at all the data, and I felt good again. So okay. I feel pretty darn good. How do you feel?
I feel good. I've been doing the same kind of thing. You get away from it, and you're not as, you know, carried away by passion of, you know, watching us absolutely crush Missouri under the greatest rushing performance in SEC history. Mm-hmm. And Florida State's had an excellent season. I've watched them a lot, read a lot about them, looked at all the numbers, but I also come back to a lot of things we'll talk about tonight that make me feel good about it. So.
Right, exactly. So, all right, well, what do we got coming up first?
We got some Lister questions. You ready?
Woo-hoo, yes.
All right. First question comes from Eric at War Gas Eagle, and he says, Nick Marshall is clearly the starter this year and next, but what do you expect from Jeremy Johnson's prep for the national championship game and for next season?
Well, first I'll say this. I was listening to Lars Anderson on the Feinbaum rebroadcast on my iPhone or something this morning, and he made an interesting point. He said that He was talking one-on-one with Miles Zahn a few days ago, or maybe a couple of weeks ago, and he said that when he mentioned Jeremy Johnson, he said Miles Zahn's eyes lit up, and he said that he thought that Jeremy Johnson was going to be a 10-year NFL quarterback.
I can see it.
Yeah, so Gus has got to be thinking, well, the team will be very different, obviously, under when Johnson is the main man, because you'll get away from some of that read option heavy stuff, obviously, and be more of a, you know, look a little more like when Cam ran it, or even a little more like, you know, maybe at Tulsa or something when he was there with a quarterback like that that could throw it, really wing mm-hmm. it. But I don't know, what do you think Jeremy Johnson's role will be in the national championship game? Will he even see the field at all?
I don't know. It's going to be such a tough game and it's such a high-level competition. Of course, you want to get him in the game because it's good for experience for him and stuff. But at the same time, if it's a close game and it's back and forth and every play matters, it's tough to stick him in there and take Marshall out.
Yeah.
Because when he comes in the game, you know, the threat of that read option they're going to be so worried about disappears. So maybe you do it, you know, just to mess with Florida State and keep them on their toes. But and I could say, how about this? We put him in the game and put Marshall in the game, and, you know, at slot receiver or something, just to really mess with them.
Man, that's the kind of thing that Gus would come up with given a month of layoff.
That's right.
Like we're going
and do some kind of double pass or,
yeah.
you know, pass to Marshall or something. So I could see that kind of thing. But I don't see him playing a lot. I mean, one or two plays tops. And next year I see him being the backup. The great thing is they both get to go through spring practice, which would be great for Johnson and Marshall, obviously. And then Johnson will be the backup next year. If we're, you know, if Marshall's banged up like this year and Johnson could play the whole game, if we're blowing somebody out, Johnson will play. And I think he'll get a lot of snaps next year and he'll be in good, you know, good shape to help us. So.
Yeah, I think that, well, it's an interesting thought that we might have gotten 2 good years out of Johnson one way or the other. I mean, he didn't redshirt, as it turned out, this current season, so he might get 2 years and then turn pro. On the other hand, if he's a backup to Nick again next year, he may get his junior and senior year and then go pro, unless he only plays 1 year and is just spectacular. But, of course, that all predicated around the idea that he actually, you know, ends up being good. We don't really know that yet. We know he can wing it pretty good. I was going to ask you, the last game that Jeremy Johnson got in was Georgia, wasn't it, for one play? Did he get in against Alabama or Missouri?
I don't think so.
I know he went in against Georgia for at least one play because I just recently rewatched the whole Georgia game doing research for the book.
He attempted one pass against Georgia. He did not attempt a pass against Alabama or Missouri.
Yeah, I don't think he was in the game, so. So, yeah, it'll be very interesting. But then we've talked about this before also, that one of the things Gus has been very good about this season compared to his previous seasons is he has limited the number, almost to none, really, the number of outsmart-yourself plays that he tries to run.
That's right.
And the one we were just talking about sounds great, but I worry that it might be an outsmart-yourself play.
I understand.
I mean, I'd rather just hand it to Trey Mason for 5 yards than do some kind of super duper.
Well, and
you know, this, Jeremy to Nick to fumble to pick six or something.
Right. And this goes back to what we talked about before: is, you know, when you're better than the other team, you don't try any of that stuff. When you're even, you can use a little bit of it.
Yeah.
But that kind of stuff is really for when the other team's better than you, and you have to pull stuff out. So. Yeah. All right. Next question comes from. Auburn Tweep is at AU Tweep, and he asked, how does the Auburn 2004 team and the 2010 team compare matchup to the 2013 edition, and how would those teams do against Florida State, this year's Florida State team?
It's the old Xbox question.
Yes.
Yeah, we talked about the 2004 versus 2010 in our columns back a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I was always saying that 2010 was slightly better, had a better chance than people were giving them against 2004, because while 2004 team is a more solid top to bottom team, 2010 has more areas of absolute astonishing excellence at key places. So it's an interesting matchup of two different teams. So when you look at 2013, it's a third completely different kind of team. Isn't it fascinating that our three best teams of the last decade are just each totally different from the other two?
They are.
So I think the 2004 defense could go a long way towards slowing down this 2013 running game. I don't know that they could stop it any better than anybody else. I know that their offense was a monster to a certain degree, running the ball and throwing. Maybe not as quite as good at running, but better throwing with Jason.
They had great receivers. I mean, that team had great.
Oh, they had the best receiving core in Auburn history. Yes, they did. 2010, I just can't. When Cam's feeling good, it's hard to ever pick against him just to grind it out and get first downs and all. So
mm-hmm. that team had probably a little bit better offensive line. They were excellent. And then, their defensive line was really good, but I think the rest of the 2010 defense was weaker than.
Mm-hmm.
The linebackers were better than this year's team, obviously. 2004's defense was better at every position than either one of the other two defenses.
Except without Nick Fairley.
Yes. But, I mean, Jay Ratliff played defensive tackle, and he's been in the NFL since then. He's made a lot of money. He's been excellent. So.
Could what would this year's offense do against a Nick Fairley defense?
That would be fun to watch. I mean, it's interesting. We're going to get to this with Florida State. We haven't played a team that's really had a great defensive tackle that could disrupt the middle and force Auburn to run outside.
Mm-hmm.
And they could really penetrate and cause problems and gobble up the running game before it gets going in the middle. And maybe Fairley could have done that, or maybe they would have, you know, channeled him and blocked him out, you know, let him run upfield and went by him. I'm not sure.
I just remember how Oregon had the defense fairly. You know, just went to total option game. They just didn't try any of their standard stuff because they couldn't do it. They had to go purely to running outside, pitching and all that. And it still didn't work. But, you know, that was the only thing that they felt like they had a chance to run the ball against us. So, yeah. Well, his other part of his question was how do those other Auburn teams match up against Florida State? We don't even know how this year's team matches up against Florida State.
Let's wait until this year's team does. I mean, I have a lot of confidence in the Auburn 2004 team against anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And the 2010 team against anybody, just because Cam and Fairley were so dynamic. So.
Yeah, I would put it this way. I would say the 2010 Auburn team, I would not bet against them against anybody. I'd say this, if the 2010 team played this year's Florida State, the 2010 team would be behind at some point, but they come flying from behind, and you can't bet against Cam.
Nope. All right. Next question comes from the Tiger Talk, is at the Tiger Talk, and he says, do you think Florida State could come in overconfident due to the easiness of their schedule so far?
Well, that's the gist of the rest of the show, so we'll be addressing that.
The short answer is yes, but we'll come back to it.
Yes.
All right, next question comes from Auburn Elvis, and he says, please manage my Florida State expectations. Is there any chance that we slow down their receivers? We'll get to that, but my short answer is probably no.
Yeah, I agree.
How good is their running game? It's really good. Three good running backs, very talented. Can we throw on them? Yes, but you know their secondary is probably the best we played, so it's going to be a challenge.
I think that I hope it doesn't come to that. I think okay. That's a big part of the game plan is that it doesn't come to that. So.
I'd agree with that. All right, and his final comment is, I predict Auburn will run that play where a small guy hides behind the line while the quarterback and running back go the other way.
This is another one of those, don't outsmart yourself, Gus.
That's right.
we're going to talk about their receivers and their running game, but I think that the best way to slow down their receivers is that to be waiting in the shadows with a wrench, like a big one, like you'd use on a like work on a battleship in the shipyards, and when their receivers get off the bus, well, I'm not advocating violence here, but I think that's the only way you can slow down their receivers. So other than that, not so much.
Yeah, I mean, we saw what happened with Missouri's receivers a little bit.
Yeah.
And I think some of their guys are, you know, as good or better than Missouri receivers.
Here is my thesis statement, and we'll go from there as we go along. My thesis statement is, Florida State is basically Missouri, but with slightly better players at almost every one of those positions.
Yes. So, Missouri offense, you're saying, yes.
Yeah. So.
All right. Next question is comes from Wardam Legal, and he says, which are worse, Alabama fans or Florida State fans? And he says, will Florida State Twitter meltdown the internet if Florida State loses?
Well, I've always maintained that Florida State fans are inordinately bad, however you want to define bad. They got spoiled by going from being nothing, basically. They were a women's school, and then they were a fairly poor football program in the 60s and into the 70s. We beat them like 11 times in a row or something without a loss until 1977.
Yeah.
And so when suddenly success shined on them in the 80s and 90s, it went to their head really fast. They didn't have any experience in how to handle it. And so they didn't really get the whole act like you've been there before because they hadn't been there before.
Well, and this is people today do not appreciate how dominant they were during that time. They only, you know, won a couple of national titles, but they finished in the top four for 11 years in a row.
That's amazing.
So, I mean, you can think about, Alabama's been good recently, and you know, Southern Cal was good for a while, but they finished in the top four 11 years in a row. That's pretty tough to do.
And they were in the first three BCS National Championship games. Mm-hmm. And they, if I remember correctly, when they joined the ACC, they didn't lose a conference game for like 3 years.
That's right.
They had that upset by Virginia, but other when Virginia was good. But other than that, they didn't. You know, that was the first one. So, yeah,
that was back when the ACC was actually good.
And they still, yeah, and that's right. And they still were undefeated. So, yeah.
All right. So, but back to his question: do you think Florida State fans are worse than Alabama fans?
I think that they act kind of the same. It's just that Bama fans actually have a history to back it up. Florida State fans are just Johnny come latelys who really don't know how to handle themselves for the most part. But you know, I say that as an Auburn fan that everybody hates Auburn fans. So, but I don't have a lot of room to talk. So before somebody throws this back at me, So there you go.
All right. Next question is this: well, can Florida State play a hard full 60? This is from Laura at Laura0419. Can Florida State play a full hard 60 minutes? How many times has Jameis Winston been hit or hurried this season?
Well, that's what we're going to find out, because the only game they even came close to having to play a hard full 60, as she put it, was against Boston College. And I mean, that says a lot by itself, you know, in more ways than one. The fact that, A, only one team – you know, that they played, even that they have to play hard against, so to speak, and that it was Boston College. It also says a lot about Clemson. I would have to sit down and watch like the whole Florida State season, which I didn't have time to do, or access to all their videos to watch it, to know really how many times he's been hit or hurried. But I get the sense that he's been fairly untouched back there. Now, maybe I'm wrong. You did have some stats about this, didn't you?
He's been hit more than you think. I mean, we'll talk about this a little bit more, but he's not nearly as big a runner as you think.
Okay.
So one thing is, he actually has been sacked a good bit. He's been sacked 29 times in 13 games. It's 2.2 per game. That would have been 13th in the SEC.
That's amazing.
So that's not good. Some of that is because he likes to stand there for a long time because he has a lot of confidence in the receivers they're going to get open. Mm-hmm. So sometimes he just holds the ball too long. It's just that young quarterback thing. So you would never guess with a guy like that they were that bad. I mean, they're also 69th in the country for tackle for a loss allowed. Wow. That would be 10th in the SEC. That would be right around the Missouri Ole Miss level. So he has been sacked a good number of times, and I think the Auburn defense can get there. But your other question – they haven't played a full 60-minute game yet. They haven't been in a close game. We're going to get to that.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, next question comes from Eric at Wargas Eagle again. He says, are we more hopeful because of our offense or because of their results inflated by the ACC? Which one of those factors do you think gives you more confidence?
It's about 50-50 to me. I mean, I feel like with our offense, we're in any game, potentially. But the fact that they have had the schedule they've had, that's what really gives me my hope and my sense of confidence. You know what I'm saying? Our offense gives me hope, but their schedule gives me confidence.
Okay. I mean, to me, our offense gives me confidence against anybody. That's how I feel.
Yeah. Do you think that their results inflated by playing the ACC? Is that a reason to feel even more confident?
It is. But here's the question you have to ask. Is you saw at the beginning of the season, we saw Alabama play Virginia Tech, and Alabama played poorly, and they still beat them by 30 points or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think Alabama would have done against this ACC schedule? But I think the results would have been pretty similar to what Florida State has put up.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they've beaten everybody by 30, 40 points a game. I think that was, you know, about what Alabama would do if they played that same schedule. So I mean, I think that's your basis for comparison. But on the other side is they haven't been pushed by teams along the way.
And how would they have done playing our schedule?
I think they'd have won a lot of games. I don't know if they won every game, but
right.
It would be interesting to see them going to Baton Rouge and playing a monsoon.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Next question comes from Jonathan Harris, who's at AU Zoom, and he says, who does the layoff favor more? He says, I think Gus has the upper hand. Jimbo does not strike me as the master planner.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think it's not so much Gus versus Jimbo as just the type of system each team uses. I feel like the defenses are going to be better, or the offenses will be not as good. That's just a given in these kind of games. And as far as the two offenses, which one will decline more or less, I feel like it's like, you know, in any situation, it's funny. If you talk about a football game in like a perfect ideal circumstance, like 70-degree weather, 60-degree weather in the Georgia Dome, then everything is working on all cylinders. But when you start doing that, what if it's raining? What if it's dark? What if the wind is blowing? What if there's snow? You know, all that. It always goes back to the running game, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think two things. One is, after this season, you have to have an enormous amount of confidence in Gus Malzahn game planning for an opponent. You know that Gus and Rhett Lash are going to come up with stuff that's going to work and be effective. And even if Florida State counters it, they'll be prepared to roll with it and move on to the next thing that'll work. The other thing is, I think the long layoff, looking at the BCS games over time, the long layoff hampers teams that rely on passing game and timing more. And I think that's more Florida State. I mean, I think, you know, when you see what we saw we do it against Missouri, where we ran, you know, three or four plays, you know, a long layoff isn't going to mess up the timing of that. We're going to do the same stuff we do. We run the same simple plays. And I think we're this 2013 Auburn offense, I would argue, is less susceptible to the layoff problems than the 2010 team was.
Right.
I think the timing thing and, you know, not being hit and stuff is not going to bother them. I think they've got the running game stuff down. I think they're going to be fine with that. So I think the result is going to – the long layoff is going to help us both from Gus planning perspective and from our offense not having as many problems with it.
And I hope people bear in mind, if we come out and do something like have the guy on the sweep collide with the running back and take them both down for a loss or something – I hope nobody points and says, see, that's what happens from that layoff, because we were doing that in the heart of the season.
Did that against Georgia.
That's what I'm talking about, yeah.
All right, next question comes from Charles Crane, who brings up a very good point. He says, Auburn has won 6 one-possession games,
man.
FSU 0. How much will that experience help in the national title game?
That's got to be huge.
I mean, my thing is, if it's close game in the fourth quarter, it's a one-possession game in the fourth quarter, everything has to favor Auburn.
Yeah.
The Auburn players have been there. They've done that. They're confident. They know all these crazy situations. They've been in them and handled them. And Florida State has not had to do that at all when the pressure is on them.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to ask you a while ago, what are the odds, the likelihood that after the game, Gus will get to say, well, we felt like if we could keep it close to the fourth quarter, we have a chance to win? Because he said that in all the big games this year.
That's right.
And this is just another one of those where we just got to keep those receivers from cutting loose and running up the score on us.
We're going to talk about it.
Yeah.
All right, next question comes from War Eagle Pooh, like Winnie the Pooh. And he says, will the Auburn front four be able to pressure Winston, and will our defensive backs be able to cover the receivers? The coverage thing I'm worried about. Front four, I think we can get pressure on them. I mean, I think they are very effective at throwing the ball. They have not played a defensive front as good as ours. And I think the Auburn defensive line has really come on the last three games. And I think they're going to be able to get pressure of Florida State and disrupt things in the backfield.
When Ellis Johnson looks at the the Florida State offensive line, what do you think he sees right now? I mean, what is he thinking?
I mean, I think he thinks they're comparable to what we saw the last three games. I mean, they're comparable to Georgia's offensive line or Alabama's offensive line. Maybe not as good as Alabama's offensive line, but so I think Auburn could get in the backfield and disrupt things, get pressure on the quarterback, stuff the run sometimes. I think they can make enough plays, and that's what's got to happen on our defense, because I do not think that we're going to cover the receiver successfully for a long time.
Now, a lot of this game, just like with Oregon, a lot of this game is going to come down to the performance of the Auburn defensive front against that Florida State offensive line, and can we get pressure? Can we get penetration? That's going to be huge.
Yep. All right, a couple more questions. This is from Brian Warren, who's at Wicker 1977, and he says, how does our offense look next year with having Nick Marshall back? He's never had a quarterback for successive consecutive seasons. It should be fun to watch.
Would you have ever imagined it would be Nick Marshall would be Gus's first quarterback to have for multiple? And it's funny because he still won't have had one for two springs in two seasons.
That's right.
So he's got Jeremy Johnson really going to be the first one to have the two-year treatment.
Mm-hmm. And Jeremy could be his first, you know, multi-year quarterback. But yeah. I think it is going to be huge. I think the Auburn offense is only going to be better next year. Yeah. You know, with basically just losing Prosh. You know, the chance we'll lose Mason, the chance we'll lose Robinson in the NFL. We did, you know, in the past couple of days, we did sign several JUCO players who are excellent players, including the number one overall junior college player, who's a receiver named Akia Williams, who's supposed to be like, if you watch the NFL, I mean, he's physically comparable to Dez Bryant of Dallas Cowboys. So an absolute stud wide receiver that we could put on the other side, you know, put in a three receiver formation with you know, Lewis and Coates and send him out there. I mean, I think it's going to be fun. Get the ball in his hands and watch stuff happen.
Man, I tell you, the recruiting class, we're up to number six in the 24/7 sports ratings. I haven't seen the other two, I haven't seen Rivals or whatever, but I did see the 24/7, and we jumped over Georgia when we got this guy the other day. We signed another guy just the other day, or got a commitment from did you see that? It was
yes.
Was he a linebacker or who was he?
There was a guy we got that switched from Georgia to us who was a defensive tackle.
That's him. That's him.
Four-star defensive tackle.
Yeah, and that jumped us over Georgia up to sixth on the list. So I just love this class in general, not just because of its ranking or whatever, but because the running back situation in 2014 is going to be loaded. I mean, you know, if Trey comes back, there's going to be a whole lot of running backs sitting behind him waiting their turn. I mean, you know, you got the two guys we signed this year. We got two guys that are coming in for 2014 class.
Is that Rock Thomas guy that everybody's excited about.
Oh, yeah. And then the two that are sort of our backups this year. So we're going to have like six.
Mm-hmm.
Good Lord.
All right. Our final question comes from Auburn Tweep, who's at AU Tweep, and he says, I think the University of Phoenix Stadium had about 50,000 Auburn fans. How many do you expect at the Rose Bowl?
Yeah, I was in my little seat at the University of Phoenix Stadium, and I agreed it was a lot more Auburn. I mean, there was a good chunk of Oregon people there, but it was mostly us. But that stadium in the Rose Bowl is so big. I mean, I honestly think that there will be a good number of people that are fans of neither one, really, just to see the game. So, how many does Pasadena hold, like 95 or 100 or something?
Something like that.
So I would say 60, but I don't know if that many that's a lot of people to travel, especially when we were just there, you know, 3 years ago. What do you feel?
I think we're going to outnumber the Florida State fans.
Yeah.
But I think it's not going to be like the Georgia Dome.
No.
So it's 70-30 or whatever.
That was hilarious.
But I think it'll be Auburn a lot number. I mean, I think there'll be, you know, 60,000 or so. Maybe.
Yeah.
All right. You ready to move in and talk about Florida State?
Yes, do it.
All right. All time, we played them, 18 times. Auburn is 13-4-1 against them.
Mm-hmm.
But Florida State went 3 out of the last 4. At the same time, we haven't played it since the 1990s. We discussed in our last episode, you know, there were some great games, a great series in there, but it's been a long time since we played, so there's not any recent history.
Yeah, yeah.
So I guess the first question is, how good is Florida State? How good do we really think they are? They're undefeated, they're number one in the country, they've crushed everybody they play, but how good are they?
There's three factors that go into how good Florida State is. Schedule. They've played, let me see here. I'm going to run through their schedule right quick, okay? And let's kind of evaluate it.
All right.
They opened up at Pitt. Ooh. Okay. 41-13 Florida State. That was the game where Winston came out on a Monday night.
That was the Jameis Winston coming out party.
Yeah. Then they welcomed the juggernaut that is Nevada football to Doak Campbell. Mm-hmm. And won 62-7. Then they welcome the juggernaut that is Bethune-Cookman. Now, I thought Bethune-Cookman was Division IV. If there is a Division IV, I've never really, I don't know. They're, but they beat both Bethune and Cookman 54-6. They then traveled up to Boston College, where they had a little bit of a struggle. They were actually trailing in the first quarter before pulling away 48-34.
That brings up you're going to talk about the final scores, but in a lot of these games, they were a little bit of a slow starting team.
That's true, and that would be great for us if they would start slowly against us.
Yes.
They played then 25 Maryland, who was later exposed as something of a fraud, I believe, and beat them 63-0. Then there was the infamous going to Death Valley, which turned out to be lie back and get a suntan valley, where they hammered the Ersatz Tigers 51-14. They never had any problem in that game.
No, Clemson and mental toughness do not go together.
Well, and Clemson kind of had one of those games where everything went wrong early and they just got in a hole.
Yeah.
And they maybe just gave up a little bit or something. That's the thing. When I look at the Florida State Clemson game, I don't know how much of that was Florida State just putting their foot on their throats for four quarters versus Florida State coming out and just smacking them upside the head so hard the first 10 minutes of the game that Clemson just kind of went in their shell and never really recovered from it. Because I think there was like a pick six, there was like a fumble for a touchdown. You know, it was just one of those things where the ball started rolling early.
Yeah, it was a complete title race in the first quarter, and Clemson never recovered.
Never recovered, right. They killed North Carolina State at home the next week, destroyed Miami, which, again, if you watched the game last night between Louisville and Miami, as somebody pointed out, that the point differential last night was the same as the point differential when Florida State beat Miami.
Mm-hmm.
So Louisville was about as good vis-a-vis Miami last night as Florida State was.
And that was the second best team they played.
Yeah, they were number 7 at the time. Now they're like number 77. They said they went to Wake Florist and won 59-3.
That's a tough road trip. Tough road trip. You don't just walk into
one does not
stroll into
Tobacco Road.
I forgot the name of the town Wake Forest is in. I can't believe it. Anyway, keep going.
Raleigh-Durham, Chapel Hill, one of those.
Nope. Keep going.
Okay. They welcomed the Orange of Syracuse and trounced them 59-3. Two 59-3 games in a row. That's pretty impressive. They then welcomed in the Vandals of Idaho and baked them in aluminum foil on 450 degrees for 4 hours to the tune of 80-14. Then they faced their lone SEC opponent, the Mighty Gators of Florida, coached, of course, number 2 ranked in the country that week and led by Steve Spurry. No, this was the Muschamp Florida Gators that were not even going to a bowl game, and Florida State won 37-7, and
Florida kind of hang around for a quarter.
They did hang around, yeah. They just have no offense. I mean, everybody beat Florida's 37-7 this year. And then they got a real challenge, John, because then they had to go play in a conference championship game against the best that the other division, whatever it's called, of the ACC had to offer, which was the Duke Blue Devils in the which a game that was played in the Dean Smith Arena. And I believe Florida State hit several three-pointers early and pulled away and beat Duke 45-7.
Again, they started slow in that game.
And I thought Coach K really didn't do a very good job preparing his team for that game. So, all right, so that was their schedule. And my point is simply that when your biggest – wait, let's see. Here's how many wins they had over teams that you just kind of hold your nose, right? They had a win over a bad Pitt team, Nevada, Bethune, and Cookman.
Well, let's start it the other way. Who did they play that was good?
Well, okay, what I'm trying to count up how many cupcakes they had, because one of their fans made a point, and I want to come back. So that's 1, 2, 3. I'm not going to say NC State's a cupcake. Wake Forest pretty much this year 4. Syracuse is a bowl team. That's fine. Idaho is 5. Honestly, Florida, you were almost a cupcake. So at least 5 cupcakes. Now, Auburn played 4 non-conference teams, but 2 of them were bowl teams.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So our cupcakes consisted of Western Carolina and somebody else.
Florida Atlantic,
right. So, I mean, I just feel like when you compare who played the most cupcakes, and honestly, Florida Atlantic – and Western Carolina both could have done a pretty good job against some of the teams on Florida State's schedule.
Well, let me throw some numbers at you. You ready?
Uh-huh.
There's a website called Football Outsiders that does and they do mostly NFL stuff, but they have some really good college statistical rankings where they look at the efficiency of teams, and their overall ranking for college football teams is called F-plus combined rankings, and they rank all the teams from one to whatever. So in their final season rankings, like I think the way it comes out is the average team that Auburn played was like 39th. That's including the cupcakes, okay? Mm-hmm. Yep. The average team that Florida State played was 63rd. Yeah. So, I mean, the best team they played all year was Clemson, who was in their rankings was like the 15th best team in the country, okay? So about as good as Missouri.
Yeah.
Okay? Yeah. Alabama way better than anybody they played. Georgia's about as good as those teams. I mean, again, for example, we talked about Boston College giving them trouble. Boston College is ranked about the same as Washington State. You know, the second best team they played was Miami, and they are, you know, way behind, for example, LSU, Georgia, Missouri, Texas A&M, those kind of teams. So, Auburn's played a much tougher schedule, obviously, and this, you know, I think Florida State isn't hardened by their schedule. It hasn't prepared them for close games, tough games, the kind of physical games that they're going to face against Auburn.
Yeah, no, I totally agree.
So that doesn't mean that Florida State's not good. I mean, from a talent perspective, you could be a really good team in a bad conference, and I think that's kind of what they are.
Yeah.
But part of what we're talking about the schedule is Auburn has gotten better over the course of the season by playing really tough teams and improving each week. And I think Florida State has gotten better, but they haven't had to push themselves as hard as Auburn has, and they haven't come nearly as far as Auburn has. And so Florida State maybe hasn't got to their potential because they haven't had to play teams where they were kind of fighting for their life every week.
Right.
The individual Florida State players haven't faced guys every week that were as good as them, and they had to worry about, you know, beating the man across the line from them every time because they were just better.
Mm-hmm.
So the Auburn guys have been facing these guys from Alabama, Georgia, Texas A&M, Missouri, who could win some individual matchups with them, and they had to really push themselves to improve and be prepared to face those games.
And one of the things we know about Florida State, we're going to talk about their defense in a minute. We're going to talk about their offense, too. But while we're talking about schedules, they were first in the country points against. In other words, they kept teams down more than any other team. Mm-hmm. But when you look at that schedule, it's not surprising that a really good team like Florida State would be first in points against. They averaged 10.7 over the season because, I mean, how many points is Nevada or Bethune-Cookman or you know, Idaho or Duke or Wake Forest, how many points are they really going to score against a good team, a good BCS Bowl-type team like Florida State? They didn't play Texas A&M. They didn't play Alabama or Georgia.
LSU is a great offensive
team. They didn't play LSU, right. So they didn't play Missouri. So, yeah. So the schedule, I think, is just the absolute key to really understanding just how good they are prior to actually watching them play us.
That's right. All right, so let's talk about the Auburn offense, the running game against the Florida State defense.
Okay.
We saw the Auburn running game peak in the championship game. Florida State's defense is excellent. Auburn averages, you know, 505 yards a game. Florida State gives up about a little less than 270. One of the things we're going to see is the Florida State defensive line is much bigger than anybody we've played.
Mm.
They are physically larger and heavier than any defensive line we play. I think the biggest guy on Missouri's defensive line is smaller than the smallest guy of Florida State's defensive line.
That's amazing. I didn't realize.
So this is something to look out for. Their defensive line is a little bit like some of the LSU wins in recent years, where they have four big athletic guys up there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little – I mean, Missouri had some very quick athletic guys who were going to play in the NFL, kind of as pass rush kind of guys. But Florida State's a little bit sturdier up there. That's going to be something to watch.
So we're clicking out over 500 yards per game, like you said. That's That's pretty amazing. And again, Florida State defense is so good, but again, they haven't faced anything like this. Now, this is what something I wanted to run by you because it's something that's kind of, I've woken up at 3 o'clock in the morning, stared at the ceiling and thought this suddenly. The last time an SEC team that was really good at one thing faced a big, powerful team in the BCS, or not, it was pre-BCS, in the national championship game, and we were saying, well, they've never faced anything like this before, was that 95 Florida team going out and playing Nebraska in the Fiesta Bowl, I believe. And that didn't work out so well for the SEC team, did it?
No. But
so that's made me kind of nervous.
Sure, but let's back up. The 94-95 Nebraska teams were, you know, I think the best teams of the modern era of college football in the last 30 years. I mean, I would compare them to the Alabama team from the last 2 years and that Nebraska team, you know, were probably the best 2 year kind of run of any team. And that team just destroyed people on the offensive and defensive lines. And, you know, Florida was fast and they had Danny Werfel and good receivers and stuff, but they got mauled on both sides of the line. And they lost the game because that's where games are won or lost. But this Auburn team is not going to get blown away on the offensive and defensive line. That's not going to happen.
Right. Yeah, so I remember Nebraska would bring strange blitzes from unexpected positions, and they really caught Werfel off guard and gave him a hard time. He had a hard time completing passes from standing on his head, you know.
But, the biggest thing was the Nebraska offensive line just absolutely picked their guys up and crushed them into the ground every single play. And after about a quarter, the Florida defenders wanted to leave the stadium. They did not want to go back out there and get beat on anymore.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't think that's going to happen. So, they are a very fast, athletic defense. I mean, talent-wise, you know, they're comparable to – you know, Georgia, Florida State, Missouri, LSU in terms of the speed and athletic ability on defense. I told you their defensive line is really good. They like to play a lot of nickel defense where they play kind of like what Auburn does, where they kind of play an extra safety guy.
Yeah.
And they're probably the guy that's kind of their best guy is kind of a guy who's a little bit – his name is LaMarcus Joyner. He's number 20. He's kind of a safety linebacker corner kind of guy. So he's a little bit like Threezy. And he does the same kind of thing where he – you know, cover slot receivers. He rushes. He tackles the, you know, comes in and helps against the run. He's kind of a similar player, but he's an excellent player. And he makes a lot of plays them on defense.
They've got isn't it a really good linebacker that they have or something that's been talking a lot?
They have a couple of good linebackers, and they have a lot of good defensive linemen too. I mean, they have a defensive tackle named Tim Jernigan.
Yeah.
The best defensive tackle we faced this year, probably. Mm-hmm. We faced some defensive ends that are as good or better than the Florida State guys, but this guy in the middle is going to be a real challenge for Auburn. I think Alabama had better linebackers than Florida State does, but I think in the secondary, Florida State's better. And I think defensive line, they're as good as anybody we played. So.
And I've noticed that Florida State is really good at jumping out, forcing turnovers, turning them into points. They like to get ahead of you, make you have to maybe get away from your comfort zone to try to catch up, make you have to pass. We don't want to do that. I know that the number one thing that Jimbo Fisher wants to accomplish is to jump on Auburn early, get out to a lead, and force us to try to have to pass a lot. Now, I don't think we will. I think we know that Gus by now, he knows, you know, he'll come out and just stick to what works. But we are kind of like a wishbone team in that manner, that if you get too far behind, you're kind of stuck having to get out of your comfort zone to try to score in a hurry. So I just think it's very important in this game that we at least keep it even and not get too far behind early and just don't get ourselves into a situation where we have to throw the ball because we need to be at our best and do what we do, you know?
That's right. No, I think – their defense in some ways is a little bit like Texas A&M last year. I mean, they're better than that, but where their offense is so good that their defense could really tee off on people,
yeah,
and come at the other teams behind. They're having to try and score, and the defense can be aggressive and take chances. And I think – yeah, the biggest thing is, like you're saying, Auburn's going to have to stay even, hang with them. It could be back and forth. It could be a shootout. And then both teams can be moving the ball up and down the field. But you're right in that Auburn cannot get way behind.
And I'm not saying we cannot pass. I mean, anybody that's watched Auburn knows we can throw the ball. But we'd rather not if we don't have to. And it's not where we're the most comfortable.
No, we don't want to come out and throw the ball 30 times in this game.
Yeah.
All right. What about our defense against their offense?
Well, I think that's really a fascinating matchup because our defense is much maligned, a lot like the 2010 defense was. It has different strengths than the 2010 defense had. Let's see. Their Florida State's offense is averaging 529 yards a game, again, against that schedule. Our defense gives up 423 yards a game. So that's not a good matchup in our favor. They're going to get their yards. They are going to get their points. This is not going to be a 3-2 ball game by any stretch. I don't know if it's going to be as high scoring as you might guess just because of the layoff. You know, remember that the 2010 Auburn-Oregon, which you'd have thought would have been 70-65, was 22-19. Who'd have ever guessed that? So I don't think it'll be as high scoring as you might guess.
But also, here's the thing with the Auburn defense. People hate the bend but don't break thing, but Auburn's defense gives up a lot of yards and keeps teams from scoring.
Yeah.
They just do. They make plays when they get close to the red, you know, down towards the end of the field and stop the other team. Mm-hmm. And so, for example, I was talking about Football Outsiders earlier. One of their measures is called FEI, and it looks at drives overall and how effective are you on a drive per drive basis. And in that ranking, Auburn's defense is the 13th best in the country.
Wow. Holy cow.
And it's because we don't let the other team score. We stop. I mean, because the ultimate outcome is, when you got the ball, it doesn't matter if you got 10 yards or 30 yards. Did you score? And in that perspective, the Auburn defense is pretty effective. Mm-hmm. And they're better than anybody Florida State has played. And our offense is better than anybody they played. So I think that's going to be a little bit of a surprise. Their offense is excellent. They have, excellent quarterback. I think the thing with Winston is, if you haven't watched Florida State a lot, you might think he's a runner, and he's not. From a style perspective, Winston is most comparable to somebody like Aaron Murray, honestly. Hmm. He's not a runner at all. His rushing yards are not on the same planet as somebody like Johnny Manziel. Okay, he's not. They don't call running plays for him, and he doesn't scramble and rush for 30, 40-yard games.
Here's his numbers.
Not that guy.
This is interesting. He's carried the ball 77 times, which is one below their third running back, and only nine below their second running back. But he's carried 77 times for 193 yards, or a 2.5 average, with a long of 20, and four of them were touchdowns. So that's 73 carries that were not goal line plunges, basically, in other words.
And, and some of those were sacks and stuff. Because in college, so the point here is he's not a big running threat. Mm-mm. He's not as good a runner as, for a big running threat as Bo Wallace was. So it's really about him as a passer, standing back, surveying the field, taking us apart. That's what you got to worry about. They have three great receivers, guys with different talents. One's a little more of a speed burner guy. One's kind of what I would call a Darvin Adams kind of guy that this possession over the middle, dependable guy. And then another one is, that Benjamin guy looks like Julio Jones, honestly. He's huge. He's very physical. I mean, even when you got him covered, he can jump up over guys and take the ball away from him. And I think that's the guy that's going to cause us real problems in this game.
Well, let's break down the four skill players other than Winston. I kind of dug around in some numbers on them. Now, at the running backs, their workhorse is Devonta Freeman. Mm-hmm. He's sort of their given, every play back. He's run 162 times for 943. So they don't have any player that's gone over 1,000 yards rushing or receiving, but they've got a bunch that are right up near it. And in fact, they could have one running back and three receivers cross the 1,000-yard mark in our game, and still lose, but they could. But they've got, so Freeman is at 943. He averages 5.8, which is, that's about what a decent workhorse running back in the SEC would, something like that, right? And 13 touchdowns. Now, they've got another running back, Carlos Williams. I assume he must be sort of their McCaleb Grant guy because he has literally half as many carries but for 705 yards, which means an 8.2 average and 11 touchdowns, including a 65-yarder. So but, I don't know this for a fact, but I'm assuming based on those numbers that he's more their little speed guy.
You would be wrong.
Really?
It's interesting. He is a guy that was playing safety.
Okay.
And they didn't need him at safety, so they moved him to running back. And what he is, he's basically – he's more of – who was that guy we had a couple years ago that was great at kickoff returns but kept fumbling the ball? He was so fast. We kept wanting him to play running back in like 2009. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I don't remember his name, but I know
he's a straight-ahead runner, very powerful, very explosive, doesn't cut a lot, but, I mean, they bring him in as a change of pace, and he just runs right by people, runs over people, and scores. But he's not shifty. He's not a great open-field runner, but he's very effective.
Well, 86 carries – 705 yards, 8.2 average. That's pretty darn good. And 11 touchdowns. Just two below Freeman.
Yep.
All right. Well, and then they've got James Wilder as their third back, who's got 78, just below Williams, for 542 and a 6.9. So it's another one of those deals where your workhorse back has fewer yards per carry because he's getting a lot of those tough, you know, bang ahead for 2 yards and a first down type of thing, I guess. And he's got 8 touchdowns too. So you got a 13, 11, and 8 touchdown guys there running the ball in your backfield. That just makes me think of like Missouri's backfield where they got several guys that are all kind of no name, but they're all pretty darn good.
Yeah, and these aren't no-name guys. I mean, Wilder was the number one running back recruit in the country a couple years ago, I believe, whose dad played in the NFL. He's very effective. So, I mean, they got a lot of talent back there.
Man. All right, those receivers, you were talking about Kelvin Benjamin. He's gone for almost 1,000 yards, 19 yards per catch, 14 touchdowns. Rashad Green has gone for 981, so he's 19 away from 1,000 yards, 14.6 per catch, and 9 touchdowns. And then Kenny Shaw has 929 yards and 6 touchdowns. So they've done a really good job, it seems like, of distributing the ball. And then they've got a tight end named Nick O'Leary, who has gone for 557 yards and 5 touchdowns and a 16.9-yard catch for average for a tight end.
He's really good.
I was going to say, usually your tight end's averaging like 6 yards a catch, not 17. So.
He's one of these big athletic pass-catching tight ends we've seen recently at Georgia, some other places. He's a guy that can catch the ball and make plays.
So that's if you count him, that's 4 receivers who have 67 catches, 50, 52, and 33. Mm-hmm. So they've got a lot of weapons that they can distribute the ball among. And that is the most, to me, the single most troubling thing about this game for us is all the different places. That's 4 different places that Winston can go with the ball, just first string, all out there more or less at the same time, depending.
That's right. And maybe you keep 2 of them covered, but the tight end gets open and then they still give up a first down.
Yes. So. That's the thing that disturbs me the most, honestly, is their diversity of weapons on offense.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's, you've seen Auburn play this year, 2013, we're going to give up points. It's going to happen. They're going to move the ball. We just got to make some plays when we need to pull the game out. So,
yeah.
All right, special teams. I think this is an area, their kicker was excellent this year, but I think overall in special teams, Auburn has a big advantage.
I was going to say, if you put Cody Parkey as the kicker for Florida State this year, he'd had 7,000 points too.
Mm-hmm.
I was shocked that Florida State's kicker won the Groza Award because, I mean, of course he's getting 8,000 extra points. They're playing all these cupcakes and kicking a lot of extra points.
And how many pressure kicks did that guy make?
None.
Exactly. So I think Auburn is much better kick returns, kick coverage, punting, pinning the other team deep, kickoffs out of the end zone. I think all of those things, Auburn's going to be better special teams. We're going to have a big advantage there.
Here's a factoid about Florida State's kicker that shows you who they've played, okay? That freshman kicker has more points by himself than all of Florida State's opponents total put together.
Yep.
Not their kickers, their whole team. If you took all the points every team scored against Florida State this year, Florida State's kicker outscored them.
And that's because their defense didn't give up a lot of points. But
golly, that's crazy. Okay.
All right, so what do we think are the keys to the game? I mean, I think, like we talked about several times already, Auburn can knock you way behind. The first few minutes of the game are crucially important.
You can't come out and fumble the first handoff and let it run back. Yeah. That would be disastrous.
We can't start like we did against LSU.
Right.
We got to have a good start, you know, an even start. If we're ahead, great. If we're even after the first 6 or 7 minutes, we're fine.
Yeah.
We'll be okay. But don't let them jump on us with both feet and be at 14-0 before we get out of the, you know, get things going. So that'll be big. The other thing is, you know, can't turn the ball over against them.
Oh, huge.
I mean, we did that against Missouri, and it was coming back to bite us a little bit, and our running game was so dominant it didn't matter. We can't give them – they're too effective, too talented offense to give them extra chances.
We gave Alabama and Missouri – this is the thing that's so amazing. When people say that we were so lucky, you know, this year, realize how unlucky we were, and we still won. I mean, we gave away several opportunities against Alabama, missed long passes and all kind of stuff. And against Missouri, we created so many opportunities, like the onside kick and other things, and we didn't capitalize. And then we gave them a fumble into the end zone, basically. So, yeah, I mean, we have won despite making insanely critical mistakes, and we've just got to limit that because you don't want to give that Florida State offense more chances than they're already entitled to.
That's right. You can't. I mean, you got to at least be even in the turnover department. Special teams are big. We talked about that. I think we talked to every game this year, these big games, we've said Auburn's going to have plays when the other team comes up to play the run, and we're going to get some white coats or somebody else wide open behind them. We got to hit those plays when they're there. You know, we've missed one or two in each of these last few games, like in the Alabama game and the Georgia game. When those plays are there, we got to hit them. You know, Florida State is very athletic on defense. They're very fast. They're not as disciplined as Alabama. They're going to leave their guys sometimes to come play up and play the run, and that's going to be there, whether it's the regular just play action or the kind of thing we did in the tying touchdown against Alabama, where he runs the read action down the line and throws it over their head.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And when we have those plays, he's got to hit them between the numbers.
Well, when Coates is wide open 40 yards downfield. I guess the problem has been that there wasn't anybody there to bank the ball off to get it.
You're talking about Lewis.
I'm saying that we hit Lewis on the bank shot. We just don't hit Coates. So Coates needs somebody to deflect it off of, too, is kind of my point.
Hi. The other thing is, finally, thinking about this game and talking about it, you cannot do anything except have an extreme amount of confidence in Gus Malzahn and this coaching staff. And maybe I'm overconfident in them, but I haven't seen anything yet that makes me give any reason to doubt them.
No, absolutely not. No, I mean, they'll have their chance to disappoint us, but I just don't see it. I mean,
if we lose the game, it's going to be because Florida State just had better players and they played better. It's not going to be because we weren't prepared and we didn't have a good plan, or Gus and them did not call a good game. That is not why we lose the game.
That is absolutely right. No, I mean, in terms of the coaching, I mean, you saw that I told you, maybe mentioned before, USA Today and their little special section, they actually said that Jimbo Fisher had the advantage in coaching over Gus because Jimbo had been a head coach of a BCS game before when they beat Cincinnati or somebody or Northern Iowa. No, I mean, Northern Illinois. And I'm thinking, now let's see, it's more advantageous to Florida State this year that their head coach this year coached against Northern Illinois in like the Orange Bowl once than it is that Gus was basically running the offense for the team just 3 years ago that beat Oregon in the national championship game.
Mm-hmm.
And that he's, you know, led us against Missouri and led us against Alabama. And I mean, being the head coach against Alabama this year was a bigger accomplishment than winning a BCS bowl game over Northern Illinois. I mean, don't you think?
I agree. Here's the other thing you know, nuts and bolts matchup. The defensive coordinator for Florida State is Jeremy Pruitt, who is the secondary coach at Alabama.
Yeah.
He's a good coach. They've done an excellent job. I mean, that team is really well prepared. They play a lot like Alabama on defense. So you like a first-year defensive coordinator, or do you like Gus and Rhett Lashley? I mean, in that matchup, I mean, it's not that Florida State's got all this extra time to prepare, and that's going to give them an advantage, because you know – that Nick Saban and Kirby Smart were spent a year preparing to play Gus's offense.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't matter. We had 300 yards rushing against them. So I think, you know, people were going to say, oh, they got all this time to prepare. In the X's and O's matchup, I like Gus and Rhett Lashley against Jeremy Pruitt.
And I like what Ellis Johnson's going to do against to at least maybe slow down a little bit that offense. Yeah.
I think they're going to score, but we'll be able to do some things to disrupt them.
Yeah.
All right. Time to make – you want to save your big prediction for the end and talk about the other bowls first or what?
Let's save it for the end, but let's don't forget.
Okay. Yeah, that would be just unfortunate.
Yeah.
All right. Let's quickly run through the other SEC bowls, and you're going to give your how you think they're going to do. All right. Monday, December 30th, the Music City Bowl, Georgia Tech and Ole Miss.
You got to think Ole Miss wins.
Yeah. And I mean, Georgia Tech running game is tricky, but you got to think Ole Miss has more talent.
If Ole Miss loses this, they really have not made the big step forward that we thought they maybe had under Freeze.
That's right. And Georgia Tech's defense is not good.
Yeah.
The Tuesday, the 31st, the Liberty Bowl, Rice, Mississippi State. Get your tickets now.
Hurry, get your tickets now. Well, this is another starch game. We talk about Idaho. Now we got Rice. Rice has had a pretty decent little year, but come on, Mississippi State is a decent SEC team. They won the Egg Bowl. They played us to the last play early in the season, so I got to go with the Bulldogs.
I'm pretty sure Florida State beat Rice by like 40 points or whatever. So Texas A&M, I mean, Texas A&M beat Rice 52-31. You got to think.
Well, Texas A&M has no defense, so that doesn't surprise me.
That's right. All right. Then on New Year's Eve, the Chick-fil-A Bowl.
Yes.
Duke, Texas A&M.
Man, that, you know, it's funny. I would say this is a terrible matchup, except that Texas A&M has no defense. So Duke is going to score some points in this game. It could be a real shootout. It's not going to be a whole lot of big defense being played in that game.
I think Texas A&M has way more talent. Duke may score some points, but I think Texas A&M is going to win by 20 points.
Yeah, 50-30 maybe.
Yeah.
All right.
All right, and New Year's Day, get up early for Nebraska and Georgia.
Ooh, baby.
And the backup quarterback for Georgia, whatever his name is.
But the thing is, I don't really have a feel for Nebraska anymore. Nebraska used to have a brand, you know, a personality stamped in cold-rolled steel on their, you know, on their front of their big giant 18-wheeler.
That's right.
And now it's just, they're kind of like a half-broken-down Volkswagen. I just don't know what to think of them anymore.
They don't do anything for me.
Yeah. If Gurley plays, the Gurley wins.
Yeah. All right. Then later that day, South Carolina, Wisconsin. This would be a good game.
Oh, the Capital One Bowl is always a good game. Some SEC mid to upper level team versus Wisconsin every year. Wisconsin's annual trip to Disney World. That should be part of their recruiting pitch. Come to Wisconsin, play in the Big Ten, and get to go to Disney World every January 1st. They were in the Rose Bowl for a couple of years there, weren't they?
They were.
Yeah, now they're back in South Florida where
they were. They were Disneyland the other year.
That's right. They can't get away from Walt. I like South Carolina. I mean, maybe I'm just a SEC homer, which I guess I am. But
I think South Carolina's going to win. Wisconsin is a good team, though. They're good.
They
on
are
defense,
good, yes.
And they have good running backs. It's going to be a good game. All right, and then the Outback Bowl, LSU-Iowa.
Didn't they just play in the LSU-Iowa, that was the matchup in the Capital One Bowl in 2004, because I ended up going down there instead of to New Orleans and saw the LSU and Iowa people everywhere. That was right when Saban was leaving after that game. That was the game where Iowa hit the bomb on the last play to beat Saban and LSU. That was hilarious.
I don't think that happens this time.
Not this year, no. LSU wins pretty easy.
All right. And then on January 2nd, the Sugar Bowl against Bama.
Oh, the Consolation Bowl. Nice game, nice season, Bama. Have some Sugar Bowl for your trouble. You got to think Alabama wins pretty easily here, unless they pull a Utah.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen Oklahoma play a couple times. Their offense does not scare me. I think Alabama shuts them down. So I think they beat them pretty solidly.
You think Saban will wheel out the videotape of the Utah game just to get his points?
I think they will, because Alabama has this thing about not showing up sometimes when they're disappointing plays, and that could happen. So, Friday, January 3rd, the Cotton Bowl, Missouri, Oklahoma State. This is a good game.
That is a good game. Heck yeah. That's going to be very close.
That's a very even matchup.
I'm going to take Missouri by 3, but I think it'll be like 33-30 or something.
Yeah, I think it's going to be – I mean, that's a very – that's a, like a 1-point, 2-point kind of game. Oklahoma State's good on both sides of the ball, so
yeah,
that'll be fun to watch. And then and that's actually – it's Friday night. That's at the same time as the Orange Bowl, or I think. The Orange – maybe it's on the same time as the Clemson-Ohio State game.
Oh, okay.
All right, and then Saturday, January 4th, last but not least, the BBVA Compass Bowl in Birmingham. Ooh. Vanderbilt versus Houston.
The game that Legion Field was built to hold, Vanderbilt versus Houston. Yeah, Vandy's a good team. You got to pick them.
Yep. Rumors today about James Franklin and other coaching jobs that were stoned out there.
There you go. Well, I mean, Vandy, as good of a season as they had, as good as they are, remember we said this at the beginning of the year, that they could be better than last year and not end up in as good of a bowl or not as good of a season. That's more or less what happened, right? I mean,
exactly right.
Why are they in Birmingham for a bowl game? Honestly, if you're Vanderbilt and you're going to school in Nashville, no offense, Birmingham, but people that live in Birmingham will back me up on this. If the Vanderbilt players are told, congratulations, you got to leave Nashville and go to Birmingham for your bowl, they're going to be like, can we just stay in Nashville?
All right. Unless James Franklin leaves between now and the bowl game, I think Vanderbilt will be fine.
Yeah.
The other thing to pay attention to
Hey, they could bring back that Caldwell guy if he leaves. That would be awesome.
I don't think so.
Just for the SEC media days.
Okay. And then the other thing to keep an eye on in terms of the Auburn-Florida State games is there's a couple of other ACC bowl games to watch. Yeah, but we talked about Duke, and we talked about Clemson-Ohio State. The other one that's out there is Boston College plays Arizona on New Year's Eve.
That'll be interesting.
The Sun Bowl or one of those. And I think Arizona's going to kill them, but it'll be interesting to see.
And if Boston College goes down in flames, that's even more ammunition against Florida State that they struggled against a team that couldn't even beat Arizona. So,
well, and then if Ohio State, crushes Clemson.
Yeah. So. Right, exactly. I had actually a couple of tidbits here that kind of got pushed down to the bottom of my notes. If I can throw them out real quick, we talked about Florida State and all. They won all 13 of their games so far by at least 14 points. Florida State's average margin of victory against that schedule was 43 points. That's the most by any team in the past decade. And ever since they beat Clemson in mid-October, they've been favored by at least 3 touchdowns in every game until ours, which I think they're like an 8.5-point favorite now. They haven't won a game decided by 3 points or less since 2010. So you were talking about how they haven't really been there and had to go, and had to play in a situation where they, needed to reach down and pull something out at the end. They haven't had to do that in 3 years.
That's right.
Over 3 seasons.
And you can practice and practice and practice for that, but until you've done that in a live game situation with the stress of the game on the line, you're not sure. And the Auburn players have been there and done that, and they're not going to be, panicked or bothered if we're behind by 3 points late in the game. And Florida State is going to be looking around going, we should be playing the backups by now. What do we do?
Yeah. Well, and here's my last and final tidbit. I'll close with this as far as our analysis goes. Since Jimbo Fisher took over as head coach, Florida State has played in 12 games decided by a touchdown or less. 12. How many did they win?
I know the answer, so I'm not going to say.
6.
6-6.
6-6. We have won 6 games decided by 8 points or less this year by just this year alone. So we know how to behave when we're in that situation. They don't have a clue. And they don't have a good record when they are.
That's right.
That's my final thought on that. So, all right, is it time?
It's time to make a call.
Who's going first?
I'll go first. I think it's going to be a close game. Auburn's going to be behind a good bit of the game. They're going to come back and win. Running game in the second half is going to take over. The defensive line is going to disrupt what Florida State's doing. I think it's going to be like 34-30.
I'm thinking exactly same situation you are. I do think that we might trail by as many as 14 points at some point in the game, and then Florida State will start thinking, hey, look at us. And then all of a sudden off goes Grant for 60 yards or Trey busted up the middle for a long run or something. But I have been thinking all day that my final score was 37-34 Auburn. Now, here's the thing. As I've, you know, as we've been talking about already, you'd think the score would be higher, but I'm resisting dropping it down into the 20s because against Georgia and against Alabama and good Lord against Missouri, but you kind of have to throw that one out because we rang up 56 against South Carolina in 2010 too. But against Georgia and Alabama, we were in the low 30s, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that seems about right for this one. I think it'll look a lot like Georgia and Alabama. I just hope it doesn't come down to another one of those kind of plays because I don't think I could take it. Although it would really cap things off for this season, wouldn't it?
Oh, my gosh. I can't do that again. No, but we scored 43 against Georgia.
Okay, that's right. So, yeah. So, I mean, I've got us scoring 37, but, I mean, it could go over 40 with just a few points. So.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, you know, you talked about Texas A&M scored a lot of points,
mm-hmm.
you know, but – Since the Ole Miss game, here's Auburn's scoring. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Just Auburn.
Yeah.
Since after the Ole Miss game, 62, 45, 45, 35, 55, 43, 34, 59.
Good grief.
So Florida State's excellent on defense. They're really good, but there's no reason to think they're not going to score 30 points.
I'm giving us 2 points more against Florida State than we had against Arkansas.
Yes.
Wow. Wow. Okay. Well, right. You know, when we hired Gus, we did know one thing was sure, and that was that we were going to score some points, and it was going to be fun seeing us do it. And I don't think there's any doubt that's been the case.
And I just think the bottom line is the execution of our running game on offense. They can be prepared, and they can be talented, and they can be athletic, but on some level, the way Auburn's executing that right now, it can't be stopped. I mean, it's not like they were – I mean, there was all this talk in the media about Florida State guys saying, oh, we've got their tendencies and all that kind of stuff. It doesn't matter because what Auburn does on offense with the read option kind of stuff, and if you're not – when people talk about read option and we say that and the commentators on TV say that, if you don't know what that is, a guy wrote a really good thing – Justin Lee wrote a good thing in some Bleacher Report where he actually took some GIFs of Auburn plays and highlighted them with arrows about who Jeremy Johnson was reading. And you could see, like, the defensive end come out and he handed it off or kept it. It's really good. If you're not sure, I think it's a good primer.
Yeah, Joel A. Erickson had one about our running game about 3 or 4 days ago, too, I think. It was really good in AL.com.
So, but what I'm saying is, you know, it doesn't matter because the Florida State guy comes, if he goes – you saw Alabama, they dived inside to stop Mason.
Mm-hmm.
And Marshall kept it and burned him.
Mm-hmm.
And you saw Missouri, they stayed outside to try to contain Marshall, and Mason killed them. He annihilated them. So it really is a 6-1, half dozen, the other choice for Florida State. You have to choose. And it's like the way Auburn plays offense, it's like a 2-on-1 fast break in basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Pick the guy you're going to cover, the other guy's going to score.
That's right. That really is what it's like.
It's exactly like that because whoever you defend, they're going to pass the ball to the other guy. He's going to get a layup. And so you choose. You have to defend one guy, and the other guy is going to get 4 or 5 yards. So the way Auburn's executing it, the talent we have on offense, the offensive line, the running backs, you know, Marshall, I think, and the coaching staff, I guess, I just don't think they can stop us enough to win the game.
Yeah, and I think that Florida State player who said they'd already figured out our tendencies – I think that's what Gus wants them to think.
Yes.
Because as they pointed out on another thing last week, Gus has no tendencies. He creates artificial tendencies just to screw with you.
Right. And we've said that all year. That's what Gus did to Alabama. He set up certain stuff for Alabama by calling these other plays all year. And then when Alabama saw that, they knew it. They watched the film. They read it, reacted, and then we went the other way. And that's 100% coming from Florida State, too.
Yeah. Right. So – all right. Well, so we think a game in the 30s, maybe low 40s at the most, and we think Auburn's going to pull it out late. So this is, I guess, our final episode of 2013 calendar year. We will be back
I guess later in the week, because the game is Monday night, so we can't very well do our show next Monday night, but we will be back at first opportunity after the national championship game to discuss Auburn's win and to kind of see where we need to go from there and look forward ahead. And then after that, I guess it'll be we'll figure out kind of what our schedule will be. We haven't really talked about it yet going forward. We've just been trying to get through this insane season. We'll worry about that when we get the chance to stop and catch our breath. But right. Yeah, but we'll be back on some sort of a semi-regular or regular format going into the in a national signing day and the spring game and all that. And I already know, by the way, John, that I plan on being at my family and I plan on being at the Kansas State game in Manhattan. I've just been telling my family I'm taking them to Manhattan next year. I haven't really told them, you know, which Manhattan I'm taking.
I've been to Manhattan, Kansas. It's not pretty. Did you watch the Kansas State Michigan game last night?
Yeah, I watched some of it.
They're pretty good.
Yeah.
That's going to be a tough game.
Yeah, oh, there's no doubt about that. I didn't think anything other than that. But, yeah, so it'd be fun to go out there. It's not that far as far as giant, empty, rectangular Western states go from us. So, all right. Well, we appreciate everybody listening to our show throughout 2013. We're glad this year's been a lot more fun, I think, for us to record and for you to listen to maybe than our first year was. Appreciate everybody buying our books and reading our columns at the War Eagle Reader. And don't forget, if you got you a new Kindle, both of our books, our football books, are on Kindle. So you can go over and zap those suckers down for a couple of bucks. So enjoy. So, John, have a happy new year, and we will reconvene on the week after January 6th.
Looking forward to it.
All right. War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
When you have to shoot, shoot, don't talk.